Hi, it's Joe.
Hi, friends. Aislinn here.
And we want to welcome you to the second half of season three of Dinner Table Talks.
We are so glad that you are here at our table with us, and we are looking forward to all of the great talks that we're going to have.
If you enjoy what you hear, tell a friend.
Grab a drink and get your most comfortable chair.
Pull it up to the table because we're about to get into it. I took my mom to an assisted living facility today to check it out.
That's a big deal.
It's been a big deal.
Transition.
The mechanics of relationships that are 50 years in the making. And how sometimes you are not surprised by behaviors. On the way home, your own behaviors, baby.
What do you mean by that, your own behaviors?
Well, not just how did they react. How did you react? How did you act? And sometimes you're not surprised by that. It's exactly the way that you act.
Right.
My point, you're thinking about what they're going to do.
I don't think like that.
No?
Maybe I have thought like that, but I don't think like...
When you're headed to a potentially hard conversation with someone that you've been in a relationship with for a long time, a closer person.
I don't build their story for them. I don't do that. That's not a thing I do. And I know you do because I've heard you do it.
With people that you know the most.
Never.
If you get into a conversation with your daughter, for example, you don't expect that they'll behave a certain way because you know them really, really well?
I'm trying to think about that. And I know that I have, but I don't think that I do.
You've evolved away from that. I think about that a lot. How are they going to react? How are they going to react?
Yeah, no, I'm...
It's not the right way or what?
It's not that it's not about not being the right way. It's just that I'm was ready to stop worrying what other people think and just go into the situation
and
say
honest,
and do what I need to do. I'm like looking at my relationships. What are the expectations of this person who is making their own choices side by side with me as I make my own choices? And I certainly don't create their stories or try to think about what they would say. Yeah, I never do that.
I thought about how much I want to talk about this. And you're venturing into things I don't want to talk about when it comes to my mom. But I did take her to an assisted living facility today. And I was surprised. Sometimes you're not surprised. Sometimes you are surprised at how someone that needed to be there was there.
Yeah.
That made that not just palatable, not just tolerable, but excitement.
Right. Making it a little bit easier for
made
her
it
seeing
easier
somebody.
For everybody.
I think you're still going to see a little bit of yo-yoing.
I think you're right. Changes. I thought about this today because one of the movements from independent living for a senior adult to assisted living, and I don't know if this is everywhere, but this decision that we have to make is moving from a full kitchen, refrigerator, stove, oven, microwave, all of it.
Yeah.
You are independent. You cook your own food if you choose to.
Right.
To not having a kitchen at all.
Yeah.
So think about what we talk about every week. How important food is to us. How important food is to us in celebration. Mm-hmm. How important food is to us in minutia, everyday, everything.
It's all we talk about.
To not have a kitchen anymore. To be of an age where maybe I can't handle maybe a kitchen. That would be hard. Now, that might not be hard for my mom, but other things are hard for her in this transition.
I think everything is hard, especially right now. I think that everything is hard for everyone. I think that your mom made things hard. And I think that now she's in the hardest part of life as we've been coded to believe this is the hardest part of life.
That's the truth. Those are interesting conversations that I'm having with her. How much of any negative that you feel are you choosing?
All of it.
She's not there yet.
All of it. We don't want to admit it. And some of us are going to go to our graves still not understanding it.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's the thing. It's like, it's okay. And I've been telling you and everybody about this podcast that I listen to with Zach Bush. He's my physician voice, farm voice hero.
Yeah.
It's all in alignment with the things that I...
What do you have to say?
...support and agree with. And he did a podcast where he had four other guests on the show.
I'm 25 minutes into this.
It was called Birth, Death, Rebirth. And it's two brain physicians, a neurosurgeon and a neuropathologist, and then a hospice nurse that is now a death doula.
death doula.
Yes. And then another massage therapist was a death doula. And they spent the whole hour and 20 minutes or whatever talking about birth, death, rebirth, near-death experiences, and about how the brain works during a disconnection.
Yeah. I learned so much about all this when my father went through it in the hospice. 10,000 hours, man. When you're around something so much, you become an expert on it and you know the signs.
But I'm going to go back to what I said last week about the 10,000 hours things. And that is that there are people who align.
Have a special.
So a doula is a personality. I believe I have a doula personality. I was a doula for about 17 births. Some people just move into these like spaces and can help people with transitions. But one of the things I thought was really fascinating about what they were talking about, every conversation we're having in the ether right now has everything to do with understanding life, consciousness, death, birth, and what does it all mean to us? Who are we? What matters as a part of your community while you're transitioning through this part of your life and you and your mother are transitioning through this part of y'all's life together? It's fascinating to be watching it and then also processing this concept of what does that all mean? And the great thing about bringing three physicians into this conversation is they're telling stories about understanding that we clearly are still conscious even when within our physical body, we're not having conscious capabilities in our mind anymore. So that concept of mind, body, spirit, spirit exists even if mind and body don't exist anymore. But more importantly than that, how do we go through these phases of life? And if we talk about birth, we have birth doulas. So of course we would have death doulas so that we can help people get through this process. So I'm eager for you to get to hear the whole thing of what you're going through right now.
Hospice nurses and chaplain even that I contracted with for my father. It's the way to do it. It's the way to do it. The hospice system, because they're using their expertise to help a very biological function occur.
That's exactly the same way we try to describe birth. It's a very biological experience. It's going to happen whether you're involved in it or not. Now, sometimes it's not going to go as smoothly.
But it could be sterile and halting and scary. Or it can be, and I've seen other things.
And the thing about it is that what's hard about...
There's a lot of fear in the medical system when it comes to births.
There's a lot of fear in the medical system, period.
Yeah.
That's the roundabout all of it. There's a lot of fear in there.
I haven't talked about much of this and realized last week that I needed to talk more about this. Because everyone my age is dealing with this with their parents right now. Just from a matter of statistics. So I've decided it's going to become part of our talk. It has to. It's the number one thing going on in my life, feels like.
Yeah. That and giving up vape pen. How's that going?
It is going much better than I thought it was going to go. The first few days were physically uncomfortable. Now I just catch myself patting my shirt or pocket to find, do I have it? Do I have it? Do I have it? It's all about the ritual of it all at this point. But otherwise, I feel pretty good.
Good. I hope it sticks. And if not, you'll move to the next.
Eat any good soup recently?
Shut up. Yes, as a matter of fact, I did. I have this friend. She's a really good gift giver. I'm sure some of you out there have these friends, right? You bring them a gift, and then the next time they see you, they bring you 12 gifts.
Right.
And then the next time you see them, you bring them 12 gifts, and they give you 24 gifts.
Right.
And you're like, I will never catch up. I will never catch up. My friend Faye reminds me of that. She's such a good gift giver. She's so sweet and kind, and she's always got a little something she wants people to try. And she's the one that I talked about last week when it came to the leeks, and she made your food for your birthday party. Well, she texted me to tell me that the leeks were fantastic. She was so impressed, and that now she had tried mushroom leek soup, and she wanted me to have some. And so I went by, after making my restaurant delivery rounds, sold some edible flowers to a local chef, and she showed off an amazing picture of a beautiful cake she made with my edible flowers. And so I go over there, and she's got this delicious soup, ready packaged, mushroom, leek. I have no idea what was in it, but I know that it didn't have dairy in it, and it didn't have gluten. Any kind of flour in it.
Right.
But then she also sent me lamb stew.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So she fed me lunch 2 days in a row.
Now, when, I'm going to try the lamb stew tonight later.
It's gone. No, I ate it.
That is bullshit.
Sorry. It wasn't that much. It was a bowl of soup for me.
A friend of mine a notable cook makes some lamb stew, and I bring it home and eat it all, and you don't get any. Come on.
You drink beers all the time that I can't drink, so I don't really give a crap. I have no guilt.
That analogy is horrible.
No guilt. All right. Whatsoever. The food was excellent. I've been so happily impressed with leeks and growing leeks. What comes out in season 4 as it relates to leeks?
I've been distracted by something you just brought up. You and I are both drinking notably less. You way more than me.
Yeah, I don't have a desire to sit around and drink alcohol anymore.
Every day, right.
Yeah, no. It's not for me.
At my birthday, one of my beer friends, knowing you're gluten-free, brought mead.
Mead. When I listened to the podcast again,
yeah.
It sounded like I said someone brought weed.
No, mead with an M. There was no weed. What are you laughing at? Listen, mead, M-E-A-D. This is honey-based ale.
I've had some honey-based weed. I mean mead.
Listen. Now, on a special occasion, we'll open up this bottle of mead that he left behind.
I'm actually looking forward to that.
Yeah,
I want to taste that again. I forgot we had that.
Fantastic. But I will, on occasion, drink a beer, and you and I fell in love on the craft beer journey.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get jealous for real?
No.
When I say, look at this one.
No, not really.
It's a peanut butter jelly sandwich porter with a splash of milk. You know,
not
whatever.
Really, because once I started down the craft brew journey, I just began to understand that I was going to go down all the journeys, and none of them are really that satisfying, but the mezcal journey's fun, the scotch journey's fun,
that's
and
just
the wine
it's the journey right now
fun,
that you're on.
The mead journey's
you
fun.
You ended your beer journey. You're not jealous when you see me doing it.
No.
Okay.
No.
Ooh. Unanswered questions.
Last week we had that amazing sushi. We found Mr. Boyd. Now we know what our sushi place is probably going to be most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking with us about whether or not they wanted to do and here is the unanswered question answer, omakase.
That's right. They said that, omakase. Is that how you pronounce it? Omakase. We haven't had a pronunciation in a long time.
Okay. I have never been to an omakase in Corpus Christi, Texas. I have heard of the omakase ritual or offering in metropolitan places north.
I'm pretty sure we had omakase at Nobu, but I just didn't know what that was.
We did and we didn't. I'll explain.
Mm-hmm.
The phrase omakase literally means I leave it up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it is most commonly used when dining at Japanese restaurants where the customer leaves it up to the chef to select and serve seasonal specialties.
Yes.
We ate omakase the other night.
Right.
You and I sitting at the sushi bar with Mr. Boyd across from us,
yes.
And feed us. You know, like, we found you. Feed
yes.
us, you know.
Yay.
And he gave us dish number one, dish number. He asked and we said, okay, yeah, I think we're done.
There was a few
that
things
is
I
omakase.
Asked for. Mm-hmm.
But his new assistant said, that had worked at Nobu was like, we're going to offer an omakase.
Mm-hmm.
At Nobu, we ate the same way that I just described. But now what I'm seeing are these 15, 20, 25 course meals called omakases.
Mm-hmm.
High dollar.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tasting menu of all kinds of different fish.
Got it.
So from Wikipedia, in the U.S., omakase usually refers to an extended sushi dinner, ideally eaten at the sushi counter where the chef prepares one piece of fish at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So when they said omakase the other night, they're talking about a prefix menu.
Right.
This many courses.
I didn't think that it was necessarily a prefix menu, although I think that that is what Nobu does, certainly on certain rounds.
That's not what
courses.
We did at Nobu.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Because we had... I remember,
this
we were drinking too much that weekend.
I'm sure
plus,
that we
it
were.
Was a long time ago because I barely remember.
You're not supposed to talk about it.
I barely remember.
We did this in Vegas. Shh.
We didn't drink that much in Vegas, there. Though. I mean, we were more like sleepyhead eaters.
At the beginning of, because every celebration is food. At the beginning of the meal, the waiter asked.
I
want
to go to Vegas and lay by the pool in a very sexy swimsuit. Can you please take me there?
Who's going to argue with that? At the beginning of that Nobu meal, I don't know if they used the term omakase, but they said, we'll bring you food until you say stop.
Yeah.
You want to trust us. And omakase means I leave it up to you.
My understanding of what they're trying to create more of is like a pop-up dinner type of situation. If I get this correct, this makes sense to me. They're doing it this way because they know they're going to be able to sell the clean, good, great fish that they want to order for this particular event. And they can make reservations. And then they know that the fish that they want to serve gets
eaten. The business side of restaurateuring is we'll offer you an X course meal. But we want to know that you're coming so that we can buy the food that we need to serve.
Well, and down here, it's hard to get these really, really choice pieces of fish if you're not selling it to a certain amount of people. And they don't ever know they're going to sell it to that many people.
That's a high, high cost to have to throw anything away.
Yeah. So it makes perfect sense to me, and I'd love to be a part of it when they decide to do it.
I leave it up to you.
You know what I'm going to grow buckets and buckets and pounds and tons of every single year about this time of year? Guess.
Okra.
I wondered if the folks at the dinner table were all screaming, okra, 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 okra.
You want to believe that the audience is saying it is July in South Texas. We know that in episode 1.47, they fried okra.
And in 1.44, we made gumbo.
Yeah, bendi masala in episode 1.51. Clearly, this is the time.
That just meant we had a lot of it.
Of okra.
I think we're going to have a lot more of it. Like, we're about to have 6 months of okra.
I've done fried okra on the show two or three times. And roasted okra, well, we roasted it in the oven, and that was the side dish once. And this is our whole thing, right? The seasonality clearly is there.
And using what your land grows best, and okra grows well down here.
Or if there's a bumper crop of this or that, figure out creative ways to do it. Now, there's been nothing really creative in what we've done with okra. Because fried okra is the number one way that okra is eaten in this country.
You don't have to make okra super creative for me to eat it, because okra is delicious. Okra is good for you.
You said something to me the other day that I took to heart. I was talking about some vegetable that I don't like very well. Maybe pineapple, because I just bought another one to make more tapache, because we're on a big tapache kick.
And tapache and tea is
But I think I said something like raw celery or pineapple. It's the texture I don't like. And you said, you're acting like a child.
Yeah, that's...
Grow
that's
the f*** up.
I didn't say it like that.
Maybe
I did.
Yeah.
The thing about it is that texture is a childish block in our brains that we hold on to, where we convince ourselves that we can't eat something.
What okra is, I love it or I hate it. But there's a lot of haters on okra.
But it's only because people with okra have this weird thing made up in their head.
Or it was served to them poorly by grandma that made it slimy or whatever it was. There's a bunch of great ways to make okra.
Okra is extremely valuable plant for many reasons. There's study, I think my dad told me this, there's study in Texas agriculture on how to use okra to help absorb plastic particles.
No, that was me.
Was it you?
Yeah, I was reading you an article from Texas Monthly on our camping trip.
Tell me about it. Tell me the article again better. Tell everyone what I was talking about better.
No, I can't describe what this... They're using okra to capture plastic.
Okra has mucilin in it, okay? Mucilin is a thickness.
Is this the truth, what you're saying?
Yes,
I've already gonged this, so we're going to find out next week.
Gong it away, but it's got that mucus in it. The mucus is the part that everyone doesn't like, but the mucus is the part that
is super valuable.
Exactly.
Pulling microscopic plastics out of your body.
Exactly.
I am not a doctor. And this podcast is about the seasonal use of food. So I need to know what our okra forecast is, and then I've got a couple of ideas.
6 months.
6 months?
As much okra as we want to harvest until the first freeze.
Okay, I want to redo gumbo.
Okay.
We did it back in episode 1.44. I did not listen to that episode for this, but I don't remember that gumbo being amazing gumbo. We're going to fry a load of gumbo.
Load.
I am really good at frying okra.
A load.
The F word doesn't offend you. Don't pretend that it does. I'm really good at frying okra.
I'm just currently wondering what a load is.
It's 6 months worth is what it sounds like. Then last night I made something that I'd never made before. But when I Googled most popular okra recipes, this is number two behind fried.
You were like, what do you have to serve, Aislinn? And I said, okra and onions.
And you said cucumber, but I couldn't find them.
Oh, I have cucumbers too.
Why are you hiding your cucumbers?
Because they're mine. Secret.
Secret. Okay. Okra tomato stew. This is a big thing. Mm. I didn't realize it. I'd never had it to my memory.
I think my mom makes that.
Okay.
I think. Well, she makes okra tomato things.
I saw all kinds of recipes for it. First, you render out the fat of some bacon. You're going to get it crispy, set it over to the side. In that pan, you put in your minced onions. I use one of your purple ones.
Red torpedoes. They're good ones.
Now, because I was using pork chops, I did the pork chops now at this point. Just kind of seared them on both sides. Then added a can of diced tomatoes. I could have cut up some tomatoes. I was going for ease here. Simmer that. Add my chicken stock. Add my bay leaves. Simmer that for 15 minutes. Add the chopped okra. Go about 10 to 12 more minutes. Salt, pepper, serve it with the crispy bacon on top.
It was very good. You asked me whether the okra was cooked tender enough. I thought it was perfect because it wasn't like gooey. It was chunks of okra, which is what I like.
It wasn't mushy.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. It was good. The flavor was great. Okra, pork chop was great.
Okra tomato stew. I'll put it up on the social stuff. Mm-hmm. Here's some ideas for future okra. Should we do these and then talk about them here? Okra and rice casserole.
I feel like you've made okra and rice casserole before.
Not to my knowledge. You're going to put some garlic, tomatoes, onion, celery.
You made an okra dish with rice that you ended up not liking because it didn't have enough flavor in it or whatever.
I couldn't find it in my past episode research. But you want to try this again?
Sure. Yeah. I'm about rice and okra.
Succotash.
Succotash.
Lima beans, bacon, onion, okra, garlic, corn, sautéed together, but...
kind of like a hash.
Yeah, succotash.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I mean, I like everything I just listed.
Mm-hmm.
Okra soup with shrimp, the most complicated of the recipes I found.
Someone made that. Either my mom or you made that.
I've never made that before.
This sounds interesting and good. I'm excited about this.
I think your parents can hold 30 this one, too. Maybe we'll do this one first.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta go get some shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
You got some okra?
Mm-hmm.
Coming soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, we are very seasonal.
Mm.
We have a plan, clearly. It goes month to month in a very methodical order. But this one was the annual, let's call it the birthday weekend trip. Yeah.
One year ago today, we went on this very camping trip.
Exactly. I've been on this camping trip many years. You and I have now been together for probably 5 years or so.
Yes, there was nostalgic talk from the others about how we ran and danced nude in the rain.
That did happen.
Yeah,
many years ago. That's what I said. I would have danced in the rain naked if I'd have been in a tent camping.
Yeah.
Because why not? I don't have any fears of that.
Well, that did not come up this year. It did not rain on our camping trip. But interestingly, we took most of the same foods that we took on last year's camping trip.
Yeah, because they're easy when you're loading up an ice chest.
Pimento cheese. You can go back to 1.47.
And pimento that one's cheese, very popular in that crowd because
that's why
they
I made all the
cheese.
Same stuff. Mm-hmm. You told me the story of how Chris, the birthday boy, the ringleader and chief technician of the camping trip every year, loved that pimento cheese. So I was like, I'm going to make the pimento cheese again.
Yep.
And it was rave reviews.
Yep.
Your chicken salad.
Also got huge rave reviews.
The Texas caviar was not well received. I think we removed that next year. And then the very easy to make, very crowd pleasing cucumber, tomato, onion salad.
I think you have to come up with these really simple salads that you add into things. My diet's so weird that I have to be aware of they're cooking cornmeal batter, fish and shrimp.
Right.
I can eat that. Mm-hmm. And they know my diet. They basically sent me a list and said, this is what we're going to be doing.
Right.
And they know us. We'll figure out how to
fit
in there. And we didn't spend as many nights this year as we have in the past. It's really
hot.
A good
call.
We're a little older. And the other thing that I would tell you, I didn't say I was old. I just said I'm a little older. You might be old. I don't know, 50, whatever. But
I don't think I age had anything to do with our decision to only spend one night in the tent in the 110 degree heat index.
I think I'm ready for the upgrade to the
camper.
Camper. Yeah. I think that it's time to make. So I planted the seed.
Yes.
And I'm ready for the perfect camper and the perfect amount of money we want to pay for a camper to appear now at my doorstep when it's ready.
Well, it was tent.
Kind of like the dog that's coming. It's going to appear perfectly when I'm ready.
You're magical that way.
I am.
No, it's not magic. It's a tent,
it's
though.
It's not magic.
And it's the air mattress, brand new. Mm-hmm. Because one of the kids stole one of our air mattresses. Yep.
Mr. Kaishin, he was ready. He's like a full-fledged, like, traveling dog now. He had all the gear he needed.
The problem with the tent and the 110 degrees is the food storage situation.
Yep. Yeah.
For perishable foods.
You're doing real ice boxes, basically.
That's right.
So you had an ice chest with the beverages in it.
That's right.
An ice chest with the refrigerated foods in it. And then the ice chest with the
extra ice,
anything extra that just kind of needed to hang out in there.
I had a system.
It was good.
Thank you.
This is one of the things that I like that you build a home. You're a Cancer, so you're a crab. And I kept talking about this. Are you a hermit crab? What kind of crab? But either way, what you need to know about crabs is crabs like to make a really, really safe home and build it up and get it all ready and get themselves all tucked into it and then protect it with their giant clampy claws.
Night one, I was asleep by 10:30.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It happened.
I was ready to go to bed.
One night in a tent. Should have said that to you. One night. I get one night in a tent and you were asleep at 10:30.
I was ready the next morning. But coffee pot.
Oh, yeah. We got to have our own coffee pot because we are. I don't judge people, or I try not to. Like, I'm actively getting better at that.
I can tell.
But I got to have my own coffee pot because
sometimes there's inferior coffee out there.
People just have the same level of expectations of coffee.
Our own coffee. Well, I noticed that our coffee area was very popular. People liked our coffee.
Well, one of the things that I think people have figured out about me, I think that there was an element of there in the first few years, like you were new to the group.
That's true.
And I think that there was maybe a thinking I was being standoffish in some sort of superiority like way. But what I think a lot of people have figured out about me is that I'm very, 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 very good at taking the time that I need to feel well in any space I'm in.
Yeah.
Giving myself room to breathe, room to back away from the sensory overloads, too many lights, too many talking teenagers,
too
many cooks in the kitchen, whatever. So I'm just going to move to the outside and just kind of observe. But what happens with that as we get older and more people are going, oh, she's not just trying to like be away from us. She's just making more room for us to spread out. And so we can come over there and like spread out with her a little bit. And we can all just kind of spread out a little more.
And have a different experience than what's over in this place.
Exactly. Exactly.
Did you know there's over 6,600 state parks in the United States covering 14 million acres of land?
And do you know the state with the most state parks?
It's got to be Texas.
It's Arkansas.
Is that right?
Yes. We had that conversation a few podcasts back.
Uh-huh. I'd like to know the top 10. Mm-hmm. But this state park that we've gone to annually, except for one year that COVID pooped on it, is Lake Corpus Christi. It's 30 miles away. It's the closest state park to us. And there's a lake with wonderfully situated camping sites. Some include trailers and RVs. Some of them are just for tents. And then you've got hiking trails. And we're a very flat part of the country. But they've done a good job at creating a little bit of elevation, a bird watching thing. Mm-hmm. It's naturally gorgeous.
And there's great things to look at. And we enjoy going on a bike ride. And we enjoy stand-up paddleboarding over the years.
There's an inflatable stand-up paddleboard on your list now.
Yeah. Because every year we would always rent them. There would be
a little rental station there at the lake.
And then we'd just pick the days and we'd rent, you know, for a few hours in the morning and then a few hours in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And whoever wanted to use them would use them.
They're available.
But Jessica and Chris got a pair of them for their
inflatables
for the birthday blow up kind.
And that sounded rinky dink to me, an inflatable paddleboard.
But several people had told me that they were impressive and then that's the way to go. And I'd never touched one before.
They were great.
They were great. Yeah. I enjoyed it very much. Of course, there's not a lot of water in the lake right now.
No.
I've seen less, but I've seen way more.
Right.
And
it was very low.
there wasn't a lot of boats on the lake. There wasn't a lot of people there. The campsite wasn't even full, and it usually always is completely full. So it was a little bit of a different year, I think.
I want to talk about some fun we had on the boat.
Yeah, we did something different this year that we haven't done with them.
But one of the times that we were out on the boat, just you, me, and Chris, he got us close to what he thought was a school, like the old brick stone structure of a school. Mm-hmm. And I was looking up on the coast, up on the land.
Yeah.
But he's like, no, in the water there. I was like, well, why the hell did they build a school at the bottom of a lake?
Right.
He said, no, they built this before this was a
lake.
It
was on the edge of the river.
And I did a little research into the state parks of America and how there are two decades that really created the system as it currently exists, the 30s and the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Our lake was created in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
As a water management system, part of a larger state water management system.
So like the retention pond that's in our pasture that we've been working on, and when a flood comes, it gets filled up. This is what this lake is. It was built to be that exactly.
It was built damming up a river to create a lake, and the structures that were there in the 30s are now underwater.
Or still there. The ones that were on the riverbanks are underwater. The ones that were built up on the bank of where they were building up.
And this was a huge push nationwide. It wasn't just in Texas. Then in the 60s, you had the, not the Peace Corps, but the CCC, the Conservation Corps, where labor all of a sudden showed up. And it was diverted to the different state parks to kind of upgrade and begin maintenance programs. But now that you've created a lake where there was not one, what can we do with this coastline? And in our case, in many other cases across Texas and across the country, it's let's create recreation. The 60s was also the rise of the camper, and that also created more interest in the state park systems across the country. I say all of that to say that the tax system over the decades has created a pretty amazing thing. The state parks I've been to in Texas, at any rate, and when we travel to Maine, we go to state parks. When we travel, we go to state parks, have all been blush and gorgeous.
Yeah. I absolutely love using public parks. I think that they're an amazing way to have all kinds of interesting adventures. And when they're funded well by a state, that's us, the taxpayers, that are funding the development of these projects or the grant-funded projects that they've gotten from federal government, which is still also our money that we paid in our... That's how it all works.
Yeah.
When they're funded well and they're well taken care of, they're very nice places to spend time on holiday weekends or whatever adventure you want.
Or our annual trip.
I like the diversity. I think that there's a lot more conversation happening about around diversity in order to make things sustainable. In order to make it sustainable, you shift gears and you make money off of this thing, or you make money off of this thing, or you make money off of this thing. And that's economic diversity or funding diversity, right? I saw someone post something about cotton this year. Remember when we were in high cotton? Remember when the cotton was tall?
Sure.
Last season.
Yeah. This year, not so much.
Well, the solution to the economic problem has often been just insurance payments, insurance paybacks, or commodity payments, or federal reimbursements, or, you know, whatever.
In the cotton world you're talking about?
In agriculture. In a lot of worlds, that's the case. What it shows me a lot of times is that in the agriculture world is that there's just simply not enough diversity. Because if you can say, remember when, and everybody can be so sad about the drought and the cotton and the sorghum and all of these things, then we're not using our land to the best advantage that it can be used to year round, no matter what the weather is. What can I get a return on investment from this land besides the insurance paybacks and besides the federal support and the state support and whatever? What are some other ways that I can do that? And if you think about something like this lake, this is a really good example of that because we've got a place where we retain water so that we have water access for city, public water. We have a place where people can use it for recreational purposes. We have a thriving ecosystem of different types of native plants, native birds, native, you know, whatever. So now you've created safety for nature.
Places to get healthy in dozens of different ways.
Yeah, all the different recreational things you can do there. And then you can also harvest fish from the pond.
Yeah.
Because I make room. I make room. I spread things out. And what I decide is that I'm waiting for the Sunday morning boat ride.
Right.
Which means a lot of people have left.
It's not about skiing and tubing and
that's all happened. The kids are exhausted and we go out to the Sunday boat ride. But I've heard, let's go do the jugs. And so people have been going in and out. Yeah, in and out. And I've heard of this because I've been around fishing families all of my life. Mm-hmm. And some of the folks that were there fishing were going out and doing white bass fishing, like hitting schools where you'd see a bunch of birds and they'd be like, oh, there's a school there. And they would go out and
hit. The birds show you where to go fish.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're hitting the white bass and they're hitting the white bass and they're pulling those in. So I have a bit of experience in the fishing world as a child.
Well, a part of having a blast on this kind of weekend is having all the right toys. And one of the right toys is Chris and his boat.
Mm-hmm.
So he's pulling the kids on the skis and the tubes, but he's also using it to fish all weekend long. So the very first thing he does after camp is set up is he goes out and he sets his lines.
Mm-hmm.
The lines are 25-foot long pieces of fishing string.
You've heard of it called a trout line, a catfish line. These are kind of...
Yeah, 25-foot long in our case, a 2.5-pound weight on the very bottom, and a floating... Basically, it's a piece of PVC with a pool noodle on top.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three hooks equidistant on the way up.
Mm-hmm.
Set them.
Mm-hmm.
He does 12, two sets of six, two different parts of the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And then every few hours, he goes and checks them.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is he's driving the boat and an aide, mm-hmm. or in the case when you and I were out there, two aides.
Mm-hmm.
Grab your little gaff hook.
Mm-hmm.
You drive slowly by the floating pool noodle and you grab it and you pull it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of tell from a distance often if there's fish on that line.
Yeah.
But sometimes, it surprises you. There are no fish. So you're doing one of two things. You're pulling the fish off the line.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're rebaiting the hooks.
Well, you're rebaiting either way.
Right. And then you drop them and you come back in a few hours.
Right.
I got to go on that, let's go check the lines two or three times. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All leading up to the big fish fry that we're going to be having.
Right.
And you've already paid your entrance fee to the park. Go grab some free fish out of the lake.
Of course, we won't talk about how much gas money he spent on running the...
Or all of the labor of putting your lines together. But it was just a fun way from like start to finish of watching a way to get fresh, seasonal, will you, right? Mm-hmm. Local food.
I also love, you were excited about being with Chris when he goes to fillet all those fish. Because it had been a long time since you'd filleted fish.
I think it might have been Boy Scout since I went and cleaned the fish.
Yeah, and so you got a chance to go and do that with him and clean.
Yeah.
So we brought that fish home.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
two different species, a big bunch of catfish, mm-hmm. and then this white bass.
And the catfish got put in the freezer for mm-hmm. a catfish fry we're going to do in the very near future.
As quick as we can. Let's eat that fresh fish.
My mom immediately...
That night.
Took the white bass. She said, and they're doing the whole 30. So they've got mm-hmm. to find a fish fry batter that meets their diet in a split second. Because we showed up with white bass.
Uh-huh.
It was fantastic. And it was these little, thin, beautiful, fresh pieces of white fish.
They're real small fish. So the fillets you're getting off of them are very small.
And she fried them. Do you remember what she said she fried them in? The batter?
Tapioca?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Tapioca flour.
Uh-huh.
That was fun.
So from the catching to the cleaning to stepping back and watching the frying.
It was a really good meal, a really good weekend. I do have to tell a little story.
Please.
We arrived early Saturday morning. Joe had us all ready to go. Drove off at 8:30, got there by 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I was impressed. We did it. Pulled up.
I want a full day.
They were like, our friends looked up, hey, they were not expecting us to be there that early. We were there. We were there for breakfast. And then I go out on the paddleboard. I've got the dog in a life jacket
mm-hmm.
with me on the paddleboard.
Right.
The 10-foot long blow up paddleboard on a no wake zone of a lake. And over there near the pier is a group of like mommy and me kayakers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, isn't that nice? And I go out, I'm paddleboarding along with my dog in a life jacket and me paddling along, doing my thing. There's no wake. And all of a sudden, it was literally like I was watching a joke on Saturday Night Live. A kayak started paddling to me like it had the most emergency to solve.
Yeah. I'm coming over because it appeared that your paddleboard is on fire and you need help.
Excuse me, ma'am. It was a young woman who could be my child. Do you have a life jacket for you on that craft? It's a paddleboard. She knew I didn't have a life jacket on that craft.
Mm-hmm. There was no stowage area for you to pull a life jacket out of?
I said, oh, I guess I kind of forgot because usually we rent them.
Do I need this?
Okay. And then at that point, I couldn't keep my mouth shut. I go, thanks for keeping me safe.
Did she say you have to go back? And-
Yeah. Okay. You need to take your craft ashore. If you need a life jacket, you can rent one from the recreation office or from the office or whatever.
But it's a requirement.
Because the thing about it is that, and I know people don't know this about me. She certainly doesn't know this about me. I could teach the class she's teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I could have taught her how to teach the class she's teaching. I am an extremely good swimmer, and I know a lot about water safety. Put that aside. Aislinn knows everything, right? She's doing exactly what this young state police, it says state police on the back of her life jacket on her kayak. She's been taught to do exactly what she's been taught to do.
Yeah.
She's very excited. She's fresh out of the program to do her job. So in the next comment she made is when I said, thanks for keeping me safe. Well, you know, ma'am, we just want to keep you as safe as your cute little dog. And that comment was one of the most idiotic comments I have ever heard, ever. Because do you think
you're not a 2-pound poodle?
Intelligent woman standing on a paddleboard with a tiny poodle in a life jacket doesn't understand that if she falls off of this paddleboard and she can't get back on it, she better hold on to the paddleboard? Because if she lets go of the paddleboard, even the life jacket that's supposed to be on the craft is going to float away with the craft.
Right. It's important to make that distinction. You don't have to be wearing a life jacket.
Oh, you don't have to wear it. You just have to have bungee, it on your craft.
There's a little bungee system on the top of the paddleboard, and you can stick it underneath there. So if you've separated from the paddleboard, you've separated yourself from the life-saving jacket. It is a weird law when you think about it that way.
It's not a real law. It's not a real law. What you said is it's a liability waiver for the state of Texas. I didn't give you permission. I didn't. My dad's like, well, you didn't give them permission, but somebody before you did. And this is where we live with the mistakes of the generation before us, where they gave away our ability to die if we want to.
Sure. But then it's a personal freedom of, if I'm a good swimmer and
I'm smart enough to have a dog on a paddleboard with a life jacket on me.
Forget the dog. I'm a good swimmer and I want to paddleboard this way, and I'm 43 years old. I don't have the freedom to do that.
Of course, that's a huge deal. However, and for me, the whole bully authority thing, like this little authority bully bullshit, like that bugged me. So that part of it is a thing for me. But the thing that matters to me most about it is, if that's not a real safety law, that's a liability waiver.
Yeah.
Because there are floating devices as big as what I was on and as capable of drowning people as what I was on that are constantly on that lake with a bunch of children on them.
Right. Every year that we go on this thing, some family has purchased a $150, 10-foot diameter, got a unicorn attached to it.
This year it was a llama. A llama this year.
And it's anchored down into the lake 20 feet offshore. Mm-hmm. And there are no life jackets required.
And you see them floating out there in the middle of the lake. And you see people that are not healthy enough trying to chase them down for their children.
With no life jacket required.
No life jacket required.
So what makes a paddleboard? Yeah.
Not just what makes a paddleboard, but where's the real evidence that the permission I have given you, the actual expressed permission that the constituents and the owners of that lake, us, the citizens of the state of Texas, have given you to basically give yourself lowest common denominator liability waiver laws, that if for some reason I didn't have a life jacket, I just would have to put my paddleboard away, even though there was absolutely zero reason for me to have a life jacket on my craft that
day. You have to put your paddleboard away and go get on your big llama.
I, Aislinn, didn't give you permission to take that freedom away. sadly, somebody older than me did.
Those arguments get lost in the, oh, she's talking about something so small.
Until you've lost freedom after freedom after freedom after freedom. And here's the deal. The way I believe about sovereignty and freedom is that it is a choice regardless of what the rules are. You still have the choice to make a free choice. You can break laws. And the thing about it is that the more we put into place these little laws, the more lawbreakers we have. The more lawbreakers you have that are actually just good citizens that are wouldn't
just
be
don't
a lawbreaker.
Agree with this or that.
The more of that you have, the more people begin to realize that following the law is pointless. If you can't enforce the law because you don't have enough enforcement,
sure.
Because I promise you, the whole rest of the weekend, if I hadn't just paddleboard on a Saturday quiet morning when there was no one else on the lake except the mommy and me kayakers, through the middle of the mommy and me kayakers where a state trooper was right there, no one would have ever even seen me. In fact, the day before, the paddle boards were used with no life jackets on them
right.
Because I told them, and Chris is like, oh, Chris is a problem solver. He doesn't give a crap about any of that.
Right.
He's just, I mean, don't get
we're
me wrong.
We're not going to fight the
he
law right
now. He stands
up
for his freedoms.
Yeah.
However, in
let
this situation, just... we're having fun. Get a life jacket, throw it on there, no big deal. And he's right. He's right. The thing with me is that it sets off these triggers that are bigger,
yeah.
Bigger to me, much bigger deals. But I love it when it comes at me in this little like wimpy little situation. That was not a big deal. That wasn't even really an inconvenience.
And why get into an argument with that
young
lady
to.
Because she didn't
She's
write
so
the law.
She's so excited to
she
be doing
know.
Her job right now.
I like, have a feeling that we will see some big shifts in how seriously we take breaking the law in our country in the very near future.
Yep.
Should we just leave it there?
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, while we're in this intellectual vibe, why don't you kick over a question we can deep dive into?
If you were competing on a cooking show, what would you make? I guess this cooking show, you get to make whatever you want.
Potato salad or chicken salad.
It's your chicken salad went over really well.
So did my potato salad the week before.
You do good on both of those.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like some kind of southern cooking show.
Mm-hmm.
Chicken salad, tater salad.
Pimento cheese, I can make that good too.
Mm.
Yeah. Anything I can make that's cold. I don't have to cook meat.
The best thing I've made in the last 2-3 years that I really remember it being fantastic, so maybe I should make this, was the osso buco that we made here on the show back, I think, in season 2 somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to do that again.
Is it?
That was a meat-led dish because there was an osso buco cut. And mm-hmm. I said, I'll buy that, and then figured out what I needed to do to make it.
You do a really good job with Asian food things.
Bullshit.
But not the
yeah.
Not that stir fry.
You
just when
said,
you,
yeah, my stir fry
when
was
when you make like
bad,
stir
bad,
fry
bad.
Asian goulash, that shit's no good.
Okay.
But when you make like specific Asian dishes, like your fried rice is good.
Yeah.
You make good fried rice. And you can make good fried rice with cauliflower or good fried rice with real
is
rice.
Is the problem with the Asian stir fries the consistency of the vegetables and ingredients or the flavor of the sauces?
It's just the muddiness. I like clarity in food. That's one of the things I've discovered about my food tastes. I like things to be clear. I don't want them to be muddy, and I don't want them to be jumbled flavors. I want to be able to taste.
Well,
I don't,
that's
you
not
can have
true in
every
a soup
flavor.
Or
yes,
a gumbo.
It is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You can have every flavor, and I can taste each flavor. That's the kind of clarity I want in any kind of dish.
Do you know how I know you're being really serious about this?
Mm-hmm.
Your hands are going everywhere. You're waving your arms like a maniac.
That's what I do. One night in a tent.
Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Dinner Table Talks. We will be back next Monday with a fresh episode. In the meantime,
hit us up on social media, send us an email, DM us, whatever. We want to hear from you.
And we hope that you're enjoying the episodes as much as we enjoy creating them for you.